Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, Madagascar's former finance minister, Harry Rajaonarimampianina, wins the presidential election, but his rival says the vote was rigged.
The election result looks quite credible. The prospects are that probably the court will confirm Mr. Rajaonarimampianina as the illegitimate president.
Fighting between rebels and government forces in South Sudan escalate as talks to end the violence begin in Addis Ababa.
This is an old tradition in Sudan, and that is that fighting always escalates ahead of talks as the opposing sides try and position themselves.
Also on the program, football clubs in Malawi stand to lose sponsorship deals after violence during a weekend match left one person dead.
The corporate world, like Carlsberg, pulled out their sponsorship because of hooliganism.
These are some of the stories we've lined up for you, so stay tuned.
Top story.
Let's begin with Madagascar, where the votes have now all been counted after a runoff election 2 weeks ago. And barring any last-minute hitches, it looks as if Harry Rajaonarimampianina will be the next president. A ceremony on Friday morning to announce the results was boycotted by his rival, Robinson Jean-Louis, who is demanding a recount. Both men were supported by former leaders who are widely seen as pulling the strings in the background. More now from Susan Holton.
Former Health Minister Robinson is considered the representative of Marc Ravalomanana, the democratically elected president ousted in a 2009 coup, which was led by Andry Rajoelina. He backed the man who is now claiming victory, Harry Rajaonarimampianina. The result was close, 53.5% to 46.5%, with a turnout of just over 50%. According to the Electoral Commission, the results have yet to be finalised, and the victor will be officially announced after a court rules on alleged irregularities. However, Rajaonarimampianina appeared satisfied and self-confident at Friday's announcement of the provisional results and said he was sure many citizens were now looking forward to a period of development and fresh hope for their country. His rival, Robinson Jean-Louis, stayed away from the ceremony. He and his team claim the vote was rigged and say the president of the Electoral Commission was biased. Commission President Beatrice Atala said her conscience was clear.
J'ai ma conscience tranquille et on a travaillé dans toute la transparence totale.
The elections were held in total transparency. You can call all the international experts you can find to verify this. I am quite happy with my actions.
J'ai pas peur de ce que j'ai fait.
Initial comments by international observers indicate that they share that view. Leonidas Tetsapsidis was there for the European Union.
As the representative of the EU, which has accompanied the process of electoral transition, I'm quite satisfied. The Electoral Commission has done its work.
The losing team have lodged their appeal, backed up by hundreds of pages of documentation, with a special electoral court, which has 15 days to study the complaint.
Susan Holton with that report. In the meantime, observers have certified Madagascar's runoff presidential polls as free and credible, urging bickering candidates to stay calm as counting continued after the vote. Earlier, I spoke to Paul Melly, Associate Fellow in the Africa Program at the Chatham House in London, and he starts by telling us what the election of Rajaonarimampianina as the new president means for the Indian Ocean island.
If the election result is confirmed and If Mr. Robinson, the opposition candidate, accepts the result eventually, that will be a huge step forward for Madagascar, because the country has been in political crisis since the beginning of 2009. And since a coup in March 2009, it has not had an internationally recognized constitutional government with full access to international aid and trade support. And the price that ordinary Malagasy have paid has been terrible. All new aid has been suspended over that period, with the exception of one new World Bank credit, but most donors have held back from providing new aid. And Madagascar's lost access to the US trade privileges that were absolutely vital for its textile industry, which is the biggest private sector employer. And until there is an internationally recognized constitutional government, the process of rebuilding, restoring international partnerships, and getting the country back on track in economic and development terms can't begin.
His opponent, like you mentioned, Jean-Louis Robinson, has demanded a recount. Where do you see all this heading? I mean, what are the chances that the appeal will be successful?
To me, it doesn't look as if the appeal has a lot of success, because the election was not tightly fought in the end. Mr. Rajan Pianina won by a 7% margin, according to the provisional results announced. And those results look to be credible because they're in line with the patterns of political support that we know on the ground in Madagascar. For example, the influential politician Roland Ratsirak from the East Coast, he backed Rajan Pianina for the second round, and he has a lot of support in that region. And the patterns of voting around the country tend to reflect those sorts of pledges of support and alliances. Mr. Robinson's support was mainly in the capital and the immediate surrounding areas. So the election result looks quite credible. 7% is a pretty wide margin. So I think the prospects are that probably the court will confirm Mr. Rajan Pianina as the legitimate president.
The former President Mark Ravalomanana is still in South Africa. What are the chances of reconciliation among all the different parties in Madagascar?
Well, a critical first step, if Mr. Rajaonarimampianina is recognised and confirmed as the new president, will be the attitude that he takes to the exiled former head of state, Mark Ravalomanana. At the moment, Mr. Ravalomanana remains convicted in trials that took place in absentia and were politically manipulated. And there's been a lot of pressure from the Southern African Development Community, the regional bloc to which Madagascar belongs, pressing for a comprehensive amnesty to be granted that would allow Mr. Ravalomanana to return from exile as a free man. If the new president abandons all that and makes sure that the amnesty is universal so the former president can come home as a free individual, that will be a very big step towards reconciliation. If he doesn't, there is risk that this will fuel ongoing contestation and challenge by Robinson, whose main political backer is the exiled former president.
I was speaking to Paul Melly from the Chatham House in London.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
South Sudan's warring parties began indirect negotiations on Friday in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, to end nearly 3 weeks of raging conflict that has left thousands feared dead. But as the talks were going on in Addis Ababa, fighting intensified as the army moved on a key rebel-held town. DW's Hirut Melese spoke to Yaki Silius, the executive director of the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria. She began by asking him what role Ethiopia was playing in the negotiations.
Well, Ethiopia is both the chair of the Africa Union as well as of IGAD, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development in the Horn of Africa, and has been playing a leading role in that capacity to bring the sides together. Of course, Addis Ababa is also the host to the Africa Union. At the moment, it seems that the Africa Union has requested that IGAD lead on the negotiations, which is in line with the principle of subsidiarity within the Africa Union. So Ethiopia's role will be to provide a neutral venue where the sides can speak.
How could this instability in South Sudan affect the neighboring countries?
I think developments in South Sudan are extremely concerning, but we must recognize that this is a country that did not exist 2 years ago. It is what we refer to as a country that has a long-term fragility. In other words, it will remain violent-prone for decades to come, and we will continue to see advances and setbacks in the years that lie ahead. I think we must simply accept that with the history of violence and instability that we've seen in South Sudan, that Unfortunately, these type of regressions can happen very easily. What we should be looking towards is a real leadership from Prime Minister Salva Kiir as well as from Riek Machar. At the end of the day, only those two factions can bring stability to South Sudan. So there needs to be real leadership and a way forward that is presented by all sides. And in the run-up to the elections, of course, the situation becomes more tense, the competition for power escalates, and often it turns violent.
IGAD has tried to bring the two sides to a negotiating table. What could be the role of the international community to bring peace to South Sudan?
I think the international community has re-emphasized the position of the African unity and indeed of Africa generally, which says that firstly, it will not recognize any unconstitutional change of government. In other words, it's warning Riek Machar that his threat of the violent overthrow of the government in South Sudan will not receive the support of the international community. And there have been threats of sanctions. You would know that President Museveni of Uganda has even threatened to intervene militarily in the region and so on. So the region and the international community are very concerned. The Americans have deployed a mediator, and there is, I think, a groundswell of support for a mediated solution. The UN Security Council has already reacted. But there is only so much that the international community can do to try and cajole the belligerents towards an agreement. And at the moment, unfortunately, it looks like fighting has almost escalated in the run-up to the negotiations, particularly around Bor, as Riek Machar's forces have apparently succeeded in recapturing Bor ahead of the negotiations. But this is an old tradition in Sudan, and that is that fighting always escalates ahead of talks as the opposing sides try and position themselves ahead of the talks. So one hopes that once the talks start, that situation will in a sense be frozen and allow for effective negotiations to take place.
Jacques Siliers from the Institute of Security Studies in Pretoria.
Human rights.
The United Nations has said the number of people uprooted by conflict in the Central African Republic is nearing 1 million, with half of the residents of the capital, Bangui, driven from their homes. With bullets from nearby fighting whizzing past, Doctors Without Borders, MSF, has temporarily suspended all but emergency care at the field hospital it runs inside the main refugee camp in Bangui, the capital of Central African Republic. More on the situation in Bangui, I turn to Rosa Crestani, the MSF Emergency Coordinator based in Brussels.
In all the country, it's a very tense situation with a lot of violence in several places, not only in Bangui. Outside Bangui, there are several towns, several villages where people are still displaced since months and where violence are still at high level. In Bangui, the situation is quite dire. We saw in the last 2 weeks growing violence and growing tension, and the fear of the population is very high. It is for this that the people move inside the camps where they feel more protected or more safe. For example, we are working in one of the camps, it's called Boy Rabe, and 7th of December there were more or less 8,000 displaced, and now we are counting more than 30,000. Or the Mpoko camp, that is the airport camp. I was there in the 6th of December, the day after the fighting started in Bangui, there were more or less 10,000 displaced, and now we are talking about more than 100,000, and it's quite impressive change in only 3 weeks.
What led the organization to reduce on the medical aid it was offering to the displaced people?
Our main concern is the security of our patients, so the security of our staff and security of our experts. In the last days, and especially the 30th and the 31st and the 1st of January, were very, very tense. The team were obliged to stay downstairs on the ground because fighting all around the camp, and also they receive a lot of wounded coming from inside and outside the camps. And this was too much, and there are some level of security that we need to continue to work. If there are bullets arriving in the camps and wounded and killed patients, this is unacceptable. It is impossible to continue to work at the scale where we need to work, because we were planned to increase our activity, because 100,000 people, they are in big needs for medical care and everything else. And our plan is on standby for the moment. We really need a little bit of basic and minimal security for the population on this camp. And this is the base. And the reason why we stop some activity and we are doing emergency care only.
Do you foresee expanding the scope of work your organization is doing in Central African Republic anytime soon?
For sure, because MSF is already working in 7 hospitals in the country. It was the plan to open another project for 2 hospitals in the southeast of the country for mid-December, and this was put in standby, and we really hope to restart the plan in a few weeks. In Bangui, we are still working in other camps, and we are still working in 2 hospitals as an emergency response and continuing to increase. We are still sending more staff, more experts, and more doctors and nurses to increase our capacity. The only concern that we have is our capacity to work and our capacity to expand. The needs are enormous, so we cannot stop to be present and we cannot stop to work.
What impact has this had, especially that most of the displaced are in their need of medical assistance?
The impact is quite disastrous, it's catastrophic, it's clear. In Bangui itself, there are a very few health structures working and being able to give medical care from a simple malaria to most emergency or medical bad condition. And this has a very catastrophic impact. So we really hope that the situation will calm down.
That was MSF Emergency Coordinator Rosa Crestani. Let's talk football now. The Super League of Malawi has banned 2 teams, the Silver Strikers and the Mighty Wanderers, for 8 and 5 months, respectively, after finding them guilty of causing violence in last Saturday's aborted match that left one fan dead and several others injured. As I found out from DW correspondent in Blantyre, George Muhango, the fear of hooliganism is now forcing many soccer fans to watch foreign soccer leagues like the German Bundesliga, the English Premiership, among others.
In terms of Malawians, to some extent, a number of soccer commentators, be it those people that like soccer in general, were surprised. Why? Because it hasn't taken long before the 2 teams had finished some bans in terms of playing on their own commercial stadiums. Mighty Wanderers, which comes from Blantyre, they have their own stadium, Kamuzu Stadium. They were engaged in hooliganism and they were banned to not to use their home ground. So true, Silver, this other time it was banned. And this definitely has already set a bad precedence in as far as football is concerned. So it's strange in the sense that this was supposed to be the deciding day for the Super League champions in Malawi.
How is the ban likely to affect the 2 clubs' participation in major tournaments like the Africa Club Championships?
In terms of the Africa Club Championship tournaments, Malawian teams haven't participated since 2004. So in as far as their participation is concerned, we can say that there isn't that much problem if it comes to those tournaments or the African tournament. But locally, because the Presidential Cup was about to kick off, and with this ban, Mighty Wanderers has 5 months ban. Definitely, they have been put out of the Presidential Cup tournament. Silver Strikers has been slapped with an 8 months ban. Definitely, it means in the Presidential Cup, they are out. Just like the Zambezi tournament, which features teams from Malawi and Zimbabwe, is also out. So this is one of the major, you know, stiff penalty that these 2 teams are going to face. And even the Super League tournament itself, even if it kicks off, definitely they will be behind. They will not play the preliminary games. So that is how hard and bad it has affected and it's going to affect these 2 teams.
Is this incident likely to change the face of football in Malawi in a way that soccer fans will prefer to stay away from the stadiums or even switch to watching the English Premiership like has been the case in neighboring countries?
It's really going to shift the football affair in as far as the corporate world is concerned to begin with. The corporate world in the first place, like Carlsberg, pulled out their sponsorship because of hooliganism. That was in 2003. Lucky enough, they are back just this year. And a number of other companies pulled out their tournament. So definitely it's going to have a setback. But for the local fans, the people that, you know, support these teams, of course, they will have a shrinking group that will support them. Arguably, I can say that it's the English Premiership which is now dominating. More people are not interested in watching local football. You go to the stadium, you're going to see few people, and most of them just go for English Premiership or the Bundesliga League of Germany, be it maybe the Spanish. These are the most dominant games that are usually watched. Why? Because of the hooliganism. But in terms of sponsorship, these two teams, Silver Strikers more especially, it can lose the sponsorship from the Reserve Bank of Malawi, which sponsors them. Mighty Wanderers have no sponsor. They depend on well-wishers. So definitely it's a setback.
George Muhango in Blantyre.
USA.
I look forward to 2014 and hope for amazing things to happen as always.
Thanks for joining me in the studio, Abubakar Jallo. Is that your New Year resolution?
No, but that is what Brenda Nkobi from Kampala, Uganda, wrote to us in an email. As you might know, millions of people make new resolutions at the start of each new year. But some of the resolutions, like quit smoking, losing or gaining weight, are, to put it politely, not as easy as making the resolution itself. Well, we did receive a lot of such messages, and I'd like to thank all of our regular contributors for thinking of us during the festive season. We here at Deutsche Welle English for Africa Service wish you a prosperous 2014 and hope you achieve whatever your resolutions you've set.
Let's get the ball rolling, Abu. What have the listeners been saying about the stories we have been covering?
Explosions shook Mogadishu. You reported that suicide attacks hit Jazeera Hotel nearby Mogadishu Airport. About 10 people were killed and 20 wounded. The Islamist terrorist group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attacks. Thanks for keeping me updated, Dawu Abdul Karib from Mogadishu, Somalia. I would like to see all young people stop drinking alcohol.
Okay, I guess that's somebody's opinion, right?
Exactly. It's what Infant Mukiza Michelle in Rohingyeri, Rwanda, wrote to us in an email. It does not relate to any of our recent report, but I did find it interesting and thought we should share it.
That is, however, quite a bold wish and probably impossible to achieve, isn't it?
I agree. That's not an easy one. We know that every nation has different orientations and regulations to alcohol consumption. Germany, for example, is quite tolerant to teenagers drinking beer, but a bit strict when it comes to selling cigarettes to minors.
Right. Big resolution there indeed. Did Infant Mukiza say why he's so opposed to youngsters drinking?
Yes, indeed. He says, we cannot shape our future when we drink too much alcohol. Too much alcohol consumption has led to many accident-related deaths among young people in Africa. I urge African youths to stop or at least reduce the amount of alcohol they consume. That's all from me. Over to you, Isaac.
Thank you, Abubakar, and thank you, Infant Mukiza, for your email. For all the W Listeners Club, tell us your current activities and we will air them on this program. Just to remind you that you can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +49 160957 59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. If you're a member of one of our clubs and wish to have your comments aired, then drop us a line with your phone number and we'll call you back. Your say will be back at the same time next week.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
And now a recap of the stories that we've covered in the last 25 minutes. Madagascar's former finance minister, Harry Rajaonarimampianina, wins the presidential election with 53% of the total vote cast in the runoff. South Sudan's warring parties began negotiations on Friday in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, to end nearly 3 weeks of raging conflict. We've also been hearing how increased violence in the Central African Republic has forced Doctors Without Borders to suspend all but emergency care in Bangui. With that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. For comments and suggestions on the stories that we've covered, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +49 160957 59510. Mark Caldwell will be here with you next week. Do join him if you can. And I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, wishing you a splendid weekend.